This is the Celebration Rock Podcast presented by 93XFM here in Minneapolis and uprocks.com. I'm your host, Stephen Hayden. Today we're playing another game of Fantasy A&R. You may remember last month we did this with the Beatles' White Album. We took that sprawling masterpiece and we cut it down to a 12-song record. This time I wanted to do a band that is even better than the Beatles. And of course, that band is Oasis. Okay, they're not actually better than the Beatles, that's a joke. But, you know, that was always the thing with Oasis. The hubris of this band, especially in their mid-90s prime when they were really one of my favorite bands of all time. Like, 94 to 96 Oasis is, like, one of those bands that I have, like, almost no critical distance from. Like, I love everything that they did at that time. The albums they put out, Definitely Maybe, and What's a Story, Morning Glory, and all the singles that they put out at that time. You know, I used to go to record stores and scour the import bins to get the singles from England so I could get all the B-sides that Oasis was putting out at that time. And, you know, I was such a snob about it that when they put out that compilation, The Master Plan, a couple years later, I ignored it because I had all those songs already. I was like, if you're a real fan, you have the singles. My point is that mid-90s Oasis is a very sacred band to me. So I figured, what better band to do Fantasy A&R with? If you were to take all that music that Oasis made at that time, both albums and all the singles, and you were to make one album, the ultimate mid-90s Oasis album, what would you put on there? To me, this is a perfect topic because it's painful for me. It's very painful. Like, I figure if I'm going to play this game, it should be harder on me than anybody else. So that's what we're doing in this episode. We're going to make the ultimate Oasis record. And my guest is Stuart Berman. He's a writer. You probably have read him in places like Pitchfork. He's been a writer there for a long time. He was a guest on our show last year when we did our episode on The Tragically Hip, so he is now officially a friend of the podcast. He's a big Oasis fan, and I asked him, hey, you come up with an ultimate Oasis record, I'm going to come up with mine, and we'll see how they compare. So that's what we're doing in this episode, and it's a lot of fun, and I'm excited to get into it. But before we get to that, let's talk about our sponsor for this week, and it's our old friends at Harry's. Now, of course, if you listen to this podcast or other podcasts, you know that Harry's is a great place to go if you need razors that are affordable and you don't want to go to the store. You know, like, look, I have to buy razors all the time, and it's a pain. You gotta go to Walgreens or something or CVS, and you wait in line. And this time of the year, it's really crowded and it's cold and it's just a pain in the neck.
You ever have to like get them to like unlock the case for you to get the razor?
Exactly.
Go find somebody, and they got to do a whole thing.
There's like an epidemic of people stealing razors apparently from Walgreens, so they're under lock and key. So forget all that. Just go to Harry's. You want to get this special limited edition set. Now, as a special offer for fans of the show, we've partnered with Harry's to give you $5 off any shave set, including their limited edition holiday sets, when you go to harrys.com/rock. Plus, you'll get free shipping. This offer is for new and returning customers, and it's only available for the holidays. Now, the Harry shaving set, as you know, it comes with the ergonomic weighted handle, the German-engineered 5-blade cartridges, the foaming shave gel, the travel cover, and it comes in a holiday gift box. And, you know, who doesn't need razors? I know you're going to need to shave before we see Tom York next week, right?
Indeed. It is a. It's cool that they're doing this for returning customers, because I am one of those.
You are.
Yeah, and usually the offers are just for the new people. So
exactly. So, yeah, so if you're new or you're returning, this is for everybody. And it's also a great way to help the podcast. So, again, go to harrys.com/rock. That's harrys.com/rock. And get $5 off your that shave set. Okay, guys, so it's Fantasy A&R again this week on Celebration Rock. We're talking about Oasis. We're talking about mid-90s, the perfect mid-90s Oasis record. This was a lot of fun. It was also extremely painful for me to cut songs I love so much, to leave them on the cutting room floor. But that's what I'm willing to do for you on this show. So let's get into it. Here is me and Stuart Berman on the Celebration Rock podcast talking the ultimate Oasis album for Fantasy A&R. So I was saying in the intro that mid-90s Oasis, like 94 to 96, is like one of those bands that I probably have the least critical distance from. Like, you know, they were a band that I loved in high school, one of the sort of big bands of like my teen years. Yeah, and they were a band that I would, you know, I'd go to the record store and I would hunt down import singles for them and I would read every article about them. I really love everything they did in that time. Even the songs that aren't very good, I think, are great from mid-90s Oasis. So playing this game is going to be an interesting thing because I kind of chose this intentionally knowing that it was going to be painful for me. For that reason, I'm just curious for you, like, where are you coming at as a fan? Like, are you pretty intense about this era, too, when it comes to Oasis?
Yeah, I was pretty much on board from, if not day one, then maybe day two. I remember seeing the video for Supersonic on The Wedge, which is, like, Much Music's version of 120 Minutes up here in Canada. And I remember, you know, I heard a lot of the hype about this band, and you know, Supersonic admittedly didn't, like, blow me away at first. Like, because it's kind of like a mid-tempo tune. It's, the video is just this, like, grainy black and white kind of, like, afterthought of the video. So I wasn't, like, totally sucked in right away. It was actually Live Forever that really sort of dug its hooks into me. I can even pinpoint the exact moment, like, you know, after the guitar solo, that third verse breakdown, and then the band comes kicking in.
Right.
Like, that was the moment where I was like, wow, that's amazing. So that was a song that really brought me in and inspired me to part with my $21.99 or however much a definitely maybe CD cost in 1994.
Yeah, like Live Forever is the first Oasis song that I remember hearing. And I remember actually reading about them, I think in Rolling Stone, where they were just talking about this British band that was very brash and I think the writer said they sounded like the Beatles, which, by the way, I always feel like that's such a misnomer with Oasis. Like, I really don't think they sound like the Beatles very much. There's some Beatlesque things in various songs of theirs, but I don't really get a Beatles thing from them. More, I feel like it's more, you can definitely hear like T-Rex and you hear the Sex Pistols and a lot of other British bands, but not as much the Beatles for me.
Yeah, I agree. Like, when I was going through this exercise and listening to the back catalog again, yeah, obviously there's Beatlesque elements, and in some cases, like, entire melodies swapped wholesale. But I was hard-pressed to think of, like, what Beatles album could these songs exist on? And it's almost like they exist on the album that might have come after Let It Be.
Or, like, if they did a bunch of, like, Speed and, like, wanted to, you know, sound like Nevermind the Bullocks in, like, 1978. Like, you know, if they did, like, a reunion tour at that time, I feel like maybe they'd sound like Oasis, but other than that, yeah. I don't really hear it. But anyway, like, I was really excited to hear them, and I remember actually going to the record store and getting definitely maybe on cassette, because bought tapes back then, along with CDs, but I think I wanted to listen to it in the car, and we only had a cassette player in the car, and I remember putting in the tape and listening to Rock and Roll Star. And just feeling like instant love for this band. There was just something about them where I'd never loved a band like that. That was contemporary, where they were just so sort of in love with being a rock and roll band and all the mythology of being a rock and roll band. I mean, this was like this was the same year that Kurt Cobain died. You know, Kurt Cobain, I think, died maybe three or four months. Yeah, he died in April. I probably heard definitely maybe. I don't know the exact. My memory is that it's in the fall of 94.
Same here. Yeah, summer. I feel like September.
Yeah, around there. Month. Exactly. And it just felt like, yeah. I mean, I don't think I was this, you know, I wasn't thinking like a rock critic so much at this time, but like in retrospect, to me, it just seems like, oh, this is like the next thing, you know, where Nirvana's done and Kurt Cobain died because he couldn't reconcile being a rock star with being a human being. And now here comes Oasis and they're like, we want to be fucking rock stars. We're going to, like, you know, smoke cigarettes and drink alcohol. And we're going to, you know, put that at the forefront of our image. And it was just something I wanted so much at that time. And they delivered it for me.
For me, like, that, they came after a period of a few years where I was just, like, deeply immersed in indie rock. Like, from Nirvana, I went to Sonic Youth and then into like SST Records stuff. And, you know, all that stuff was about Kill Your Idols. And like, you know, this is a clear break from classic rock. Like, this is something new. And then when I heard Oasis, I'm like, okay, it's okay to like classic rock again.
Right.
Like, I can go back to that.
And, you know, before we start carving these albums up, you know, definitely Maybe is like one of my favorite albums of all time. It's definitely one of the most important albums of my life in terms of just my relationship with it and how it influenced my taste. And then What's the Story? Morning Glory is a record I don't like quite as much, but I love it a lot. And it's another sort of towering record for me. So both of these albums I really love, and I wouldn't want them to be different. And certainly all the singles from this time, too. Part of the fun of this band was that you could get a single like every 3 months, and the B-sides yeah. were always amazing. And they were the first band that I was into that was like that. And really, I haven't had quite that experience ever again with a band where I just felt like every single you had to buy because there might be the greatest song that they've ever made, like on the B-side.
See, I didn't collect the singles so religiously because, you know, they were expensive back then. Like, right. If I had $20, I wanted to buy a full 75-minute CD with, you know, 15 tracks on it versus, like, a three-song CD single, which might have cost $10 on import.
Right.
So I immediately, like, played catch-up on the B-sides, like, when the Master Plan compilation came out.
I remember at the local record store, I knew that they had a copy of the Some Might Say import single. And yeah. It was always hard for me to get the family car to go to the record store because my mom would always give me a hard time about how much money I was spending on CDs. So what I would often do is I would go to my religion class in the middle of the week because I could always take the car to go there. And then I would take the car to the record store on the way home to buy music. And one time I had to drive really fast to the record store to get there before it closed, and I was going 90 miles an hour on the highway in a 55 mile per hour zone, and I got pulled over, and they took 8 points off my license for that. And like a year later, my mom got a letter that said I had like 1 point left on my license because of speeding tickets. And but I did get that single, and it is one of the great singles in Oasis's catalog. So, you know, all's well that ends well. But yeah, I was breaking.
That story is like an Oasis song. Come to life. Like, gonna drive, never gonna die.
Exactly.
I'd say I'm actually more of a Morning Glory guy than a Definitely Maybe guy.
Wow.
You know, Definitely Maybe is sort of a, you know, the teaser, and then Morning Glory, like, really, yeah, for me, that stands high above. And putting this our sort of alternate universe record together and slotting the song side by side, like, the difference in production really struck me. It's so dramatic. You know, Morning Glory is such like a huge cavernous record in comparison to Definitely Maybe, which is like feels really compressed in comparison.
Right. Well, this is interesting. Okay, so this is an early clue that our records might be significantly different, because I love Morning Glory, but to me that's like a extremely high peaks and some kind of low valleys. Like, I don't really need, you know, like, Hey Now, I don't really need to hear that song ever again.
Oh, you just wait, my friend.
Oh, man.
There will be some discussion of Hey Now.
Oh, man. Because I was, my fear with these is always, like, when I did the White Album with Rob, I thought, oh, maybe our albums will be too similar. And I was worried about that here, but okay. Because I haven't seen your list and you haven't seen mine. So this will be a dramatic reveal in this episode. Before we get to our albums, I'm wondering, what were the most painful songs for you to cut off? Because we're doing a 14-track album here, and originally I thought, let's do a 12-track album, and then I was like, no, that's excruciating. I can't do a 12-track mid-90s Oasis album. That would be too painful. Let's do 14 tracks. But I know for me, I had to leave off songs that I love dearly. What are some songs that you wanted to put on but you couldn't because you just couldn't find the space?
Well, yeah, like when I did my first preliminary pass where, like, I'm dropping and dragging, like, yeah, I want that. And before I knew it, I had 22 songs. I'm like, yikes. Like, this is going to be difficult. So, yes, my version does not include Rock and Roll Star.
What?
I know, like, it's an iconic Oasis song.
Oh.
You know, It's like their self-defining anthem. But
you just stuck a knife in my heart already. I don't know if I can take any more. But okay, what else did you leave off that was painful?
I really like Columbia. Is sort of like the one Oasis Madchester song.
You're right.
Which I feel is just like an important part of their story, and it's sort of a nod to their roots. Even though they weren't like explicitly associated with Madchester, you know, Noel had 1 foot in that camp through like In Spiral Carpets, and yeah, I feel like it was almost like the last Madchester song, Columbia. And on top of just being like a good groove, it's a really catchy tune.
But didn't make it.
Didn't make it. I left off Wonderwall for a number of reasons. One, it's like the song is just so pervasive. It almost doesn't feel like an Oasis song anymore. It's just like it's oxygen. It's just part of it's a natural element of our planet, Wonderwall. Part of it was like snobbery on my part, where I'm like, I'm so sick of that song, I don't really need to hear it again. But also, in my alternate universe here, Wonderwall is like the Hey Jude. It's the standalone single, independent of any record. So,
oh man,
in my universe, it still goes on to be a huge worldwide hit, just not on this record.
Okay, I mean, I should say quick that like, and I posed this scenario to you when you know we were talking about doing this episode, that like the scenario in this alternate universe is that we're running like a mercenary, let's say American record company. I know you're Canadian, but we'll say Americans because it's more logical that that Americans would be mercenary in this instance. You know, we're more mercenary in general. But anyway, we're the mercenary.
Canadians are just politely mercenary.
Yes. Exactly. So like we're the mercenary American record company. We're seeing Oasis have all these hits in England. They have these, you know, two big albums. But you know, we're saying we don't know if these albums will be big in America. So we're gonna pull all the best material from this work into like an American album that we're going to put out in 1996. So in your scenario, you're saying like, we're still going to put out Wonderwall, but we're going to put it out as a single, not on the album.
After the record is a huge smash success, you know, you drop Wonderwall right out, you know, a few months later, and people will just be like, wow, like I thought this album was perfect, but you know, this band is obviously clearly capable of so much more.
Well, my friend, you have murdered me already. Like not putting on Rock and Roll Star, not putting on Wonderwall. That's incredible to me. On my album, the most painful cut for me was Some Might Say. I didn't put Some Might Say on my record, and it's weird because that is one of my favorite Oasis songs. If I made a top 10 list, like Some Might Say would be in the running for that. But the reason I didn't put it on is that there's another song I put on that is similar to that. And if I put them both on, it would have been redundant. And I felt like I had to put the other song on first. So
you really find that going through these tracks, like, you know, especially with all the B-sides, like you realize like there's certain modes that,
right,
you know, they were working in. And yeah, there's like three versions of the same kind of song.
Right.
So I have like for Rock and Roll Star, I have a substitute for Rock and Roll Star, which I prefer.
There is no Rock and Roll Star substitute, my friend. this is obscene what you've done, but we'll get to that later. I also didn't put on Columbia on my album, although I did initially, and I was listening to my playlist on my deck while drinking bourbon, and when I got to Columbia, it just did not fit. So that's why I cut it. It didn't. I was like, this Oasis album, you have to be able to drink whiskey to it, and it has to work. And like the whole thing worked except for the Columbia part. As much as I love that song, and I found another song that worked better, so it just got cut for that reason. And another song I put on my record originally, and it just didn't fit with everything else, was Morning Glory.
Ooh, ouch.
I love that song so much. That was painful for me. But again, it's less about the song than the flow of it. And it was really a matter for me, and we'll get into this when we talk about our records, where I had too many bombastic rockers on my album, and I wanted to get something a little softer on there as contrast. So I was like, okay, I got to make a painful cut, and that was gone. One more song that I wanted to put on. Like, initially, this was a song that jumped immediately in my head as, like, a song I'd want to put on a mid-90s Oasis record. And it's a B-side called Step Out, which I think was it was supposed to be on Morning Glory, and they cut it because Stevie Wonder was going to sue them because the song rips off Uptight, the melody, basically, from that song. And I think they gave Stevie Wonder writing credit on the song. But I've always loved that song. It's such a great vocal from Noel Gallagher. It's one of their kind of great pop songs that they have in their catalog. I just couldn't find the space for it. And it was another one of those sort of like, I already have a lot of sort of up-tempo rockers on this record. I want to have maybe another ballad on here instead. So it got the cut for that reason. So, I mean, so that's like an EP's worth of great songs I didn't put on here that I feel really bad about not putting on.
And I should say, one of the reasons also I left out Wonderwall is because, vibe-wise, it didn't quite fit with what I was going for, which is to present Oasis as this, like, omnipotent rock and roll band. And Wonderwall just felt a little too vulnerable.
See, I got to say that, like, in our sort of mythical mercenary record company, I think you've already been fired for not putting on Wonderwall. I think you're already... Because I feel like they're going to be like, this guy has a drinking problem, or there's some sort of mental issue going on with this guy, because he didn't put on Wonderwall. So we got to get rid of him. So I think...
But when it becomes the top-selling single of all time...
It can be a single and other... But this is the 90s. We're trying to sell CDs here. You know, we're not selling singles here. You know, we're trying to sell CDs. They want you to put it on the record. So I'm just saying... You know, I think you may be fired for this decision. But on the other hand, I admire your hubris here. Like, you're not being predictable. So
I'm thinking outside the box, as they would have said in corporate boardroom speak back in the day.
That's true. Maybe they're going to be like, "Hey, this guy, he's so crazy that he's a genius. He's thinking outside the box. Let's name our record company Stuart Berman Records." So it could go that way too. So
I did give my album a title.
I did too, actually.
Definitely Glory.
Ooh. I'm not going to say my title yet because it's named after a song on the record. So I'm not going to say it yet. Definitely Glory, though. I like that. Or it could be like Maybe Glory, you know, sort of like a, kind of like this, like
no,
the Strokes.
There's no doubt. This record is glorious.
I'm going to say like, okay, I'm going to let you go first on your side A, but I'm going to say about my record, best album of the 90s, I think. The album I made, the greatest album of the 90s. I'm going to say that because I'm going to be like, you know, okay, computer, you're pretty good, but you're not as good as the album I made. You know, never mind. You're good, but no. This album I made, I think, is the best album of the 90s. So, but I'm going to let you go first. Like, what is on your side A of
all right.
What's it called again? It's called Definitely Glory?
Definitely Glory.
Definitely Glory.
And we open with the semi-title track. What's the Story, Morning Glory?
Ah.
You know, which, you know, arrives in like a wail of, you know, sirens and helicopter noises and just sort of, and then it's like off to the races.
Yes.
And, you know, this song for me, I feel like is like Oasis at their peak power. Like, it's just like, it's a powerful rock and roll song. It's like an amazing performance from Liam. And also like has a bit of more of an emotional undercurrent to it than you get from a typical Oasis track. You know, it's got a sort of sense of hunger and desperation to it, which, and you know, listening to it, like I was driving around and had the song, like the production on that song is so bizarre. It's just like there's just guitars wailing and squealing throughout the entire song.
Yeah.
And just gives it this like tension, this like unrelenting tension throughout.
It's a bit of like that's a Be Here Now, it's like a Be Here Now preview a little bit, because there just seems like there's like 1,000 guitars on that song, and you know, it's very over the top. Also, one like a rare, great Noel Gallagher lyric on that song, "All your dreams remain when you're chained to the mirror of a razor blade." I think that's a really good line. And Noel Gallagher, some many, many, many terrible lyrics. I think even as, even from someone who loves him dearly, he's not a great lyricist, but I always like that lyric. I think that's a good line.
I've always considered him like a master craftsman as opposed to an artist, per se. He knows how to write a really great song, but, you know, within a sort of established template. Like, he can make you the best pop song there is, but he's not going to reinvent the form per se.
Yeah, I don't know. I think he's a great artist too. I think there's an artistry to the to write a song that like literally means nothing, but figuratively means everything. You know, like there's almost something about his lyrics where there's like they're abstract to the point of like they become profound in some way, and maybe it's how it shows that like in a great rock song. It's not really about what you say literally, it's about what you suggest. And I think he's a master of suggesting greatness without actually stating anything profound. And I think you can do that in a rock song and be a great artist. So that would be my argument for him being a great artist. But anyway, what else is on your side A?
Okay, then, so after Morning Glory, we go into Live Forever.
Yes.
Just to show, like, you know, a lighter side of the band, a little more optimistic, uplifting side of the band. And then from there into Supersonic.
Yes.
So at that point, we're just sort of like, you know, just kind of like showing off. Like there's three A-plus singles right off the top.
Yes.
And then we, you know, simmer down into Some Might Say. I'll represent for Team Some Might Say in this exercise. So it's a good track four. Always feels kind of like the, you know, should be the, not a come down, but just a settle in a little bit.
Yes.
And some might say it's just a great example of like what I think was so good about Noel's writing at this period. It's like, you know, you got a really catchy verse and then a chorus, and then you get this like bonus chorus. Like with like the, yeah, standing at the station part where it's just like, wow, like the song's just like, I already thought the song was elevated, and then boom, he just sort of knocks it up a notch with this like little like bonus upsized, supersized version of the chorus.
I think what makes that song is in the outro, Liam and Noel singing the chorus back and forth to each other. It's a great example of their contrasting voices, which is when you get that in an Oasis song, I always feel like you're really hitting a home run. So that's always my favorite part of that song.
And then we follow that with what I consider like a top three greatest Oasis song, Slide Away.
Yes.
Which, again, it's just got sort of that, again, more of that emotional undercurrent to it. You know, Oasis are often considered just like kind of like a party band, and cigarettes and alcohol and waving the Union Jack while you're out of your head. But, you know, Slide Away is a great example of showing like their depth. And then time to kind of, we're getting towards the end of side one. Let's simmer down. We've bowled you over with five amazing songs. And this will be my first B-side selection, which is Rockin' Chair, which I think is just like, just got such a great melody. Like, and that's the other thing, by the way, since it's like the verses are sometimes catchier than the choruses. And, you know, they, to the point where the verse kind of becomes the chorus in some cases.
Right.
And then from there, we end off side A with a great Morning Glory deep cut, Cast No Shadow.
Ooh.
Which, what I love about it is I love the way Noel and Liam sing together on that on the pre-chorus.
Yes. And a song dedicated to Richard Ashcroft.
Yeah, the mad genius of Richard Ashcroft.
The mad genius. Okay, so pretty good side A. I like your side A. But it's funny, on my record, I'm more excited about side B than I am about side A, because I feel like my side A is kind of predictable. But, you know, you got to go with, just because it's predictable doesn't mean, I feel like you don't want to overthink this, because you got to pretend like people have not heard these songs before. You got to like put yourself in a world where like Wonderwall doesn't exist. And like Oasis is a brand new band, and like how are you gonna like just bowl people over and make them believe that this is the greatest rock band of all time? So, on my side A, you start out, and my opening track and my last track were very obvious. I was like, there's only one choice for the opening track and only one choice for the closing track, and of course the one choice for the opening track, Stuart, is Rock and Roll Star. You have to start this record with Rock and Roll Star. It is like leaving out, I Believe in America from The Godfather or something. Like you have to, that is the sort of mission statement of this band. This band is not whole if rock and roll star does not exist. So, and I think that is one of the great sort of side one, track ones of all time. So you put that number one. Number two, like you, I put Live Forever.
Nice.
Because you got to have Live Forever on the record, one of the great Oasis songs. And it's a song like Rock and Roll Star. It's another anthem, but it's a little bit different. It feels kind of like a ballad. It's a little bit slower, but it's very uplifting. It's a very beautiful song. And I think it's another one of those examples of what I was talking about before, where Noel Gallagher is able to create this, I think, great rock and roll song message in that song without actually saying anything profound. Like if you look at the lyrics to that, he's not really saying anything that is especially smart or funny or insightful, but the effect of hearing Live Forever over that music communicates something that like really no lyric ever could. It's something really powerful and great.
That's the kind of song, it doesn't really have a proper course. It just sort of accelerates and just gets more intense. Like it just sort of like subtly ramps up.
And really you can't undersell the value that Liam Gallagher brings to that song. His vocal on that is, I don't think, like, if Noel Gallagher sang that, I don't think that song it nearly has the impact that it has it when Liam sings it. So my next song, and because you got to have this on the record, Stuart Berman, Wonderwall, number three. You hit people with the rock and roll with note one and two, and then you downshift into this classic song that people are going to be busking to in 200 years because it's just that kind of song. Because you got to have it on, and you don't want to lose your job at the imaginary record company, so you're going to leave on Wonderwall. Number four, Don't Look Back in Anger, because I'm killing people with this record. Again, I'm making the greatest album of the '90s here, so I'm not fucking around here. I'm going for the gold. Don't Look Back in Anger. So we're going Rock and Roll Star, Live Forever, Wonderwall, Don't Look Back in Anger. If this isn't your favorite band of all time at this point, then get the fuck out. Like, you're not gonna, if I don't have you yet, then you're not gonna like Oasis. But if you are in the ballpark, you are going to love this band, I think, at this point. So I've given you four orgasms in a row here at the beginning of the record. So we're gonna cool it out a little bit with a song that I feel like is like the dark horse greatest Oasis song, or at least it's a song that I always hear Oasis fans say that they love, and they think no one else loves this song, but I think everyone loves it, which is She's Electric at number five.
That's landfill Oasis for me.
What's that?
That's like landfill Oasis for me. Like that's
landfill
that for
Oasis?
Me is like among the most expendable songs.
What?
Records. Yeah.
Mr. Hey Now? You're implying that Hey Now is on your record and you don't like She's Electric? Oh my God.
I like it, but I don't think it's like, you know.
What?
It's not going to. It's not the kind of song that's going to blow people away.
It's a beautiful. You know, to me, it's like.
Hey Now sounds like a jet plane taking off over your face. Like, it's a powerful song. But more on that later.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Okay, I'm very curious to hear other people opine on this, like once they hear this episode, if they prefer Hey Now to She's Electric, because I think it's self-evident that She's Electric is just like this great pop song with like a great Liam Gallagher vocal on it. It's super charming. I've met a lot of Oasis fans who love that song, but you know, we'll see.
It's the Digsy's dinner of
Oh, get out of here. Get out of here with this.
It kind of represents that point where Britpop sort of like steps over the line into like Hugh Grant rom-com soundtrack.
Oh man, it keeps getting worse from you. Okay, let's move on. My sixth track on side A is one of my favorite B-sides by Oasis, and it's a song called Fade Away from the Cigarettes and Alcohol single. The Cigarettes and Alcohol single is like maybe my favorite Oasis release of all time. You have the great cover of Liam and Noel in a hotel room drinking champagne with like two models. And just every song on that single is great. Fade Away is maybe like the closest they got to making a punk rock song. Like, it kind of sounds like a Sex Pistols song. And again, like a great sort of Liam Gallagher, Johnny Rotten style vocal. And the lyrics to me are, again, like, this is kind of like the rare, really good Noel Gallagher lyric. To me, it's sort of like the reality on the flip side of Rock and Roll Star. Like, Rock and Roll Star is this sort of aspirational song. And Fade Away to me is a song about feeling like you're in your 20s and your life is already over. And that seems to me to suggest a reality of what their lives were actually like at that time and what was at stake if they didn't make it as a band. So I've always loved that song. My last track, and this might be somewhat controversial, but I don't care because it's a cover. It's their cover of I Am the Walrus from 1994 that's on the Cigarettes and Alcohol single. I'm not talking about that Master Plan bullshit version, which is like only 6 minutes long. The one on the single is 8 minutes long, so I wanted the 8 minute version. I just love this song. I think it's a cool side to Oasis that doesn't exist on a lot of these other songs, where it's them just sort of becoming this drone rock band where they just ride the same groove for about 4 minutes on this cover that I think is a really great cover. And I also like that it winks at the Beatles a little bit, you know, because that was a big part of their mythology. Another thing I always loved about this single, and I don't know how well you know this recording, but at the beginning, Liam Gallagher says, "Does it matter if it's our tune?" Although he may also be saying, "Does it matter if it's out of tune?" Like, do you know what he, do you know what he's saying? Does he say, "Does it matter if it's our tune?" Or does he say...
I don't recall that.
Okay. Well, other Oasis fans out there, if there's a ruling on that, I'd like to hear from you. But I always thought that was an awesome thing. So,
to be honest, I always like skipped over that cover. Like, I...
Oh, just, man.
It's like I don't need them covering the Beatles. Like, I want
it's a great cover, though. It's an amazing cover. And it's not just like them. It's not like All Around the World where they were trying to make a Beatles song. Like, this is like them playing it as like a bar band, basically, and it, or like a psychedelic rock type thing. So, because like in my original cut, I had Columbia in that slot, and it just didn't work. Right. And I really like I Am the Walrus as being just more of a psychedelic freak out type song, which again,
it's the I Want You, She's So Heavy of your
exactly. So I thought that was a great, and again, I have to emphasize, this is the 8 minute version from the single, not the 6 minute version that's on the Master Plan. They edited the one on the Master Plan is cut down by 2 minutes, but you really need that extra 2 minutes of just noise at the end where they're just sort of droning out and playing the same groove for a long time.
Maybe that was my problem, though. I was more familiar with the Master Plan version.
No. See, those extra 2 minutes of noise are all the difference, my friend. And you can find both on Spotify, by the way, and seek out the longer version. I implore you. Right. Okay, so we have some controversy already. You're bad-mouthing She's Electric, and you're sort of pointing to your side B, having some contentious choices on your side B. So I'm excited to hear what you have. What's on your side B?
All right. Well, we ended off side one with Cast No Shadow, you know, that sort of darker, more somber ballad. Time to get the party going again with some Cigarettes and Alcohol.
There you go.
Much like, you know, and, you know, obviously a song heavily influenced by T-Rex's Get It On, Bang and Gong, which also kicked off side two of Electric Warrior. So,
oh, very nice.
Yeah, I'm honoring that tradition. Then I throw in another favorite B-side, Underneath the Sky.
Oh, my goodness.
Which, it's funny, we're talking about the Stevie Wonder rip. You know, this song actually probably has a more flagrant rip of, like, the Higher Ground groove.
Oh, that's true.
But it's sort of like Stevie Wonder mixed with the Smiths. It's kind of like Oasis at their most Smithsian.
See, it's interesting.
But I just really love the chorus hook on that song. And it's also kind of just a weird little side of them that they never really ventured down ever again. Just sort of like weird, psychedelic, jangly pop band.
You're picking some left-field B-sides here, by the way. Like, Underneath the Sky and Rockin' Chair are not top-shelf B-sides that I would consider for Oasis, necessarily. Like, I like both of those songs, but they're both kind of left-field choices. Like, it's very interesting to me.
I just think, like, Liam's performances on both are really, really great. Like, they're sort of like classic young Liam.
Yeah, totally.
Then we go to obviously the most underappreciated track that we're going to be talking about today, Hey Now.
Oh, my God. Which,
I'll tell you, when I first put on What's the Story, Morning Glory, it's like, okay, you know, it's Hello, it's pretty good intro. Roll With It's never been my favorite Oasis single. But then Wonderwall, great. Oh, Don't Look Back in Anger, like, you know, beautiful Noel performance. That was a surprise. And then I remember, like, Hey Now kicking in at track five and going, all right, this album is amazing. I just love the vocal melody on this, and just like that big, just like riff that opens it up and sort of punctuates each chorus. It's just always been a personal favorite of mine, and it's like a song that nobody talks about.
I'm stunned by this. I'm stunned that you were listening to. I'm stunned when you were listening to Morning Glory, and you were like, "Yeah, Wonderwall's pretty good. Don't Look Back in Anger. Yeah, it's pretty good." Oh, Hey Now. This is fucking great. Now I'm in the pocket because Hey Now is on. I'm stunned by this. I love it. I love that you picked this song, even though it's totally inexplicable to me.
The verse melodies on that song are catchier than a lot of Noel's choruses. Like, it's just, I just think it's a huge sounding song, but it's just got, I don't know, it hits me like, it's me right to, you know, in the sweet spot. It's just, I think it's like the most underrated song in the early Oasis canon.
This might be my least favorite song on the first two albums. I think Hey Now would be in the running. Like, that or Dixie's Diner, it would be at the bottom, I think, for me. They'd be brawling it out at the bottom. Yeah, I was like, this is always a song I always assume that they were like Owen Morris said to them, hey guys, one more song. We need one more song. And Noel's like, Hey Now. Or maybe they're watching Larry Sanders or something. And like they heard, wasn't that because that was the
Hank Kingsley.
Yeah, Hank Kingsley. That was his thing. Maybe, Noel Gallagher was doing blow and watching Larry Sanders. And he's like, here we go. Okay, get in here, guys. We'll bash this out. Hey Now. Here we go. But I want to go back. I see the way you're talking about it makes me feel like I've just totally missed the point of the song for years. So I like that you're doing this.
And then, like, the strings come in at the end. It's beautiful. It's like a little cherry on the sundae.
Oh, man. Okay, so Hey Now. So what's next on your album, side B?
Then we do Don't Look Back in Anger.
Okay.
And then I, too, selected Fade Away.
Nice.
This has always been a fond favorite. And for me, that's sort of subbing in the rock and roll star vibe. Like, you know, such as, like, scrappy, bash it out kind of rock and roller. And I always like that song. I first heard that song on that Help compilation, that big charity record that came out in 95 with like Oasis and Radiohead were on there and Paul Weller. And there's an alternate version of Fade Away. It's kind of like a sort of folkier version of it.
Oh.
And then I heard the electric version after that. And I'm like, wow, oh, the song just kicks.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think that would work nearly as well as like a folky song. I feel like you need the volume on that number to really sell it.
Yeah, and then in the penultimate position, we go with Champagne Supernova.
Ooh,
not the last. It's hard to not have that song be the grand finale because it is like the ultimate Oasis song in many ways. It's, you know, it's their Stairway to Heaven. It's their November Rain.
You know what? I know what you're going to do here. I think I know what your last track is.
Do you want to guess?
Yeah. I think you're going for something kind of cute and circular here. You're going to put Acquiesce last. Am I right?
You are.
Ah, I knew it.
So I treat like Champagne Supernova is kind of like the big show closer and Acquiesce is the one and done encore.
Well, and because they also, he starts off playing Morning Glory at the beginning.
Yeah.
So you.
And I also just think it's like the ultimate Oasis song in a sense, like of getting both Liam and Noel's energy captured and their dynamic.
Right.
You know, Liam with the really like, you know, bringing the full attitude to the verses and then Noel bringing the more sensitive side to the chorus.
Right.
I just think it's Oasis in a 4-minute and 28-second nutshell.
Yep. Oh, so that's it. That's the close.
Mic drop.
Of Definitely Glory.
Yeah.
I like it. Okay, so on my side B, I start my side B with Acquiesce. And that's also the title of my record. And it's a cheeky reference that the Gallagher brothers are making to this album basically being a hatchet job on their first two albums. So they're saying we're acquiescing to our record company. So that's sort of the end joke of my album title. Acquiesce, as you were saying, I think this is probably the best Oasis song of all time. I mean, it's definitely in the running for me. I was listening to it a bunch over the last couple of days, and I'm like, yeah, this is maybe the best Oasis song. I mean, for the reasons you were talking about, I mean, just the, you know, Liam singing the verse, and you got Noel on the chorus. I mean, the riff is awesome. It just sounds like a pulverizing type riff. So powerful. It just has everything that I want. It has the attitude, it has the sensitivity, it has the melody, it has the swagger to it. So yeah, I was getting a little nervous that you weren't going to put Acquiesce on your record. And I was like,
it was almost my opener. I experimented with it being the opener, and then I thought, wait, no. But then I was like, how do I follow Champagne Supernova if I'm on there? So I don't want to just default to have it be the final track on the record. Then I thought maybe like an acoustic song, like Whatever, to go, you know, towards the end.
But then you went kind of with the circular thing. You were like, we're going to put this last, and it's going to reference the first song. I like it. That's a good, clever construction. And I could see that coming when you were doing that. And I was like, that's where he's going to put Acquiesce. He's going to put it at the end and to echo Morning Glory at the beginning. But yeah, I'm going to put it at the top of my side B. Because again, like, I think it's a great opener. I like it more as an opener maybe than as a closer. But I put it at the top of side B. Next track is Supersonic.
Right.
And unlike you, I that song actually bowled me over the first time I heard it. That's actually the first song on the side B of Definitely Maybe. And I just love the drum part on it. You know, any song that starts off with like drums like that, I'm usually a sucker for. You know, it's sort of like they're When the Levee Breaks, you know, has like the cool drum break at the beginning. Next song is Cigarettes and Alcohol. And that's why I didn't put Some Might Say on my record, because I thought, okay, I can't have two T-Rex songs on here. So I chose Cigarettes and Alcohol just because I felt like that is such a quintessentially Oasis song. And I think especially like if this was like the first record that you were going to hear by them, you know, you need that song. It's just such a core of their sort of early persona, that they're these sort of dead-end working-class dudes who just live to party and live it up on Friday night, which makes them sound like we're talking about Poison or something. But, you know, that was their thing, a very sort of uplifting idea of like you live the rock and roll lifestyle. It's sort of a way to transcend daily drudgery, which was a great way to think about rock stardom at the time, because, again, coming out of grunge, you know, rock stardom was talked about in such a sort of, it was almost like a cross to bear or something.
Yeah,
like
what would mean?
And Oasis really brought it back to this idea of, you know, if you live a dead-end life and you are either going to be in a band or you're going to work in a factory, like it's better to be in a band. And it's even better to be in a very successful band where you can make your dreams come true. And again, as I said before, my favorite Oasis release ever is the Cigarettes and Alcohol single. And on that cover of the single, again, where they're in the hotel room swilling champagne with models and stuff, I just remember, like, as a 17-year-old seeing that and just thinking that was, like, the coolest thing in the world. Like, wow, these guys are awesome. Because I think I probably knew somewhere that photo was posed, but I think I wanted to believe that it was just, like, a candid shot of, like, oh, this is just what Oasis happened to be doing when someone took a photo of them. Like, this is just, like, what their life is like. So I thought that was amazing. Fourth track, What?
I was going to say, like, that mindset's much more of, like, almost like a hip-hop mentality.
Right.
Exactly. An alternative rock mentality, which is like, yeah, this is our ticket.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. And we're not ashamed of it. And, you know, instead of, you know, again, like, complaining about it or worried that, you know, like, Mike Watt or Ian MacKay might look down on you, you know, it's like, no, we're going to live it up because our life would have been shit otherwise if we hadn't have been successful. Yeah. My fourth track, downshifting into a B-side, a very beloved B-side, the song Talk Tonight, which is a song I've always loved. It's funny because the recorded version, and I forget what single this is on, I think it might be on the Some Might Say single, but I'm not sure on that. The studio version, I'm not as much of a fan of as some of the live versions that were circulating around this time. Like, there's that live video, Live by the Sea. I don't know if you ever saw that. That was like a concert video that came out in like 95. And Noel does an acoustic set in the middle where he plays Talk Tonight and he plays another song called Sad Song, which is like, you know, definitely an example of like Noel Gallagher not being kind of lazy with his lyrics. Like, I wrote a sad song. Let's call it Sad Song. But I always loved the version of Talk Tonight from that video. So that's the version I'm going to put on my record, the live version of Talk Tonight from the Live by the Sea video, where it's just Noel playing by himself.
A lot of the Oasis B-sides are fine Noel in this sort of more, you know, pensive mood. And they're great songs, but a lot of them just didn't feel like Oasis songs to me for the record, for the purposes of putting this record together. Like, it's almost like, oh, Noel's got a really great solo record in him.
My
A&R guy would tell Noel to put out a solo record as a stopgap release.
Yeah, but I wanted another acoustic song on here. I mean, that was another instance where I felt like if I put Morning Glory on this side, that's just like, it's like too many bangers. You know, you gotta quiet it down. And I just think that's a great song. And that's an example of a song that Liam Gallagher should not have sang. Like, I'm glad Noel Gallagher sang it. Like, it was perfect for his voice. The next song, the fifth track on my side B, is a song called Listen Up. And it's another B-side from the Cigarettes and Alcohol single. Like, so I'm basically putting all of the Cigarettes and Alcohol single on my album because, again, I love that release. And I just really like this song. It's another song that kind of starts off with the drums. It kind of sounds like it's almost like a rehearsal type song. It's very loose, but I like the looseness of it. It has a nice groove, and it builds to a really nice climax with a pretty amazing Liam Gallagher vocal. So it's a good example of like a rock song that's like a mid-tempo song. It's kind of bringing you out of talk tonight. Next, I have Slide Away, which, you know, if Acquiesce isn't the best Oasis song, then maybe Slide Away is the best Oasis song. Like, it's in the conversation of like greatest Oasis songs. And I think you said that earlier, because you put that on your side A. Just, you know, again, for all the attitude that they had early in their career on Definitely Maybe, it's such a, just a beautiful love song. But again, another example of, like, if you look at the lyrics, they don't make any sense, really. But the sound of it and the way Liam Gallagher sings it, like, you know what it's about. Like, you don't need to listen to the lyrics because it's all expressed sort of beyond the words when you listen to it. So just a beautiful song. And then my last song, because, Stuart, you got to put the song last. It's Champagne Supernova. You got to put that song last. One of the greatest album closers of all time. Even Acquiesce, I don't think can follow that song. Just an epic, beautiful song. Not a dry eye in the house when you play that. And I believe that at the end of this album, you hear that song and you're like, okay, they said this was the best album of the 90s, and I believe them now. Because this song is like, you know, it's like Free Bird, Hey Jude, you know, Had a Kid or something, and, you know, then put in, I don't know, like, I don't know what else you put in there. I mean, every great, you know, the last half of, like, the rocking part of Bohemian Rhapsody and the rocking part of Stairway to Heaven, like, you put all those in there. That's how you get Champagne Supernova. So that's how I close my album. My album, Acquiesce, the greatest album of the 90s. So,
hey, there's no crime in being obvious.
Hey, man, you know, again, we have to exist in a world where we haven't heard this song a million times.
Yeah.
And we have to create something that people will eventually get sick of because they play it all the time because it's awesome. You know?
Yeah. What I've always liked about Champagne Supernova as an album closer on the original Morning Glory record is it's basically a song basically acknowledging, like, all right, the good times are gone. like, this is as good as it got. Now we begin the slow fade into middle age.
Well, and, like, it's also one of those things, too, where, you know, to hit upon a familiar theme, I think, from this episode, is that that Noel Gallagher was a master of coming up with phrases that make no literal sense, but, like, have sort of, like, like a figurative logic to them, like Champagne Supernova. I don't know what the hell that really actually is. I mean, it kind of sounds like a, you know, like the after effect of like a really bad hangover or something. Like you have a champagne supernova because you hit it too hard the previous night. But you hear it and it just makes sense. Just like saying like a love song called Wonderwall. You know, why does that doesn't make any sense? But like when they do it, they make it make sense, which I think was always the genius of Oasis.
I'm still trying to figure out the art of mastering the art of walking slowly down the hall faster than a cannonball. Yeah. I think that just means you're walking at a medium pace.
Yeah, that's true. From Morning Glory, tomorrow never knows when it doesn't know too soon. You know, that's another one where, you start thinking about it, and it's sort of like a brain twister, and then you're like, "Oh wait, this is just really stupid. I don't need to decipher this. This is just the dumb lyric that Noel Gallagher wrote, but it's also a genius lyric that Noel Gallagher wrote. It's both at the same time."
Yep.
So okay, well,
fine line between stupid and clever.
Exactly.
As the wise band once said.
Well, Matt, it was fun to discover the genius of Hey Now with you in this episode. Yeah. I feel like I've learned a lot.
And I'll go back and give She's Electric.
You have to. That Hugh Grant crack. You're going to regret that. That's preserved forever on this podcast. And you're going to.
It hurts because it's true.
Stuart, it's always a pleasure having you on, man. Thanks again for playing this game with us, man. And take care.
I had a lot of fun. Thank you.
All right. So that was me and Stuart getting into it, talking about Oasis, and I know I'm going to listen to this episode and regret not putting on the songs I left off. Like, I still can't believe I didn't put Some Might Say on my album. That's honestly, I feel like that would be like a top 10 Oasis song for me. But when you put Cigarettes and Alcohol on the record, you can't put that song on too. So I don't know. If you are angry at this episode, I am angry with you, believe me. So let's talk about a man I'm not angry with, Derek Madden, the man who makes it happen. Thank you, Derek, for making it happen.
I would have put it on there, I'm just saying.
Yeah, okay, I know. Hey, I deserve that. Josh Copperman, you wrote our theme song. Thank you, Josh. And of course, all of you, our Celebration Rock listeners, thank you so much for sticking with us, listening to our show, supporting us, leaving us ratings on iTunes, telling your friends about us, talking about us on social media. You know, we've developed a nice audience over the years, and it's all because of you and your support. So thank you so much for that. We will be back next week with some more Celebration Rock. We are getting near the end of our season. Our last episode is December 17th. So, you know, this is sort of the electrifying conclusion of 2018 for us, but we have some really cool episodes lined up to send you off into the holidays. So it'll be fun to get to that. So thank you again, guys, for listening, and we'll see you guys again next week.
On the Westwood One Podcast Network.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draftaccess to register for free entry today.